welcome to Small Spark Theory. This podcast is designed as a collection of thoughts, ideas, and practical tips on using marginal gains to help your agency new business endeavors. Small Spark Theory is created and hosted by me, Lucy Mann of Gunpowder Consulting. Hello and welcome back to Small Spark Theory. Now, today, this is a slightly terrifying episode for me because for the first time ever, I'm interviewing somebody who's a professional podcaster. I'm delighted to welcome to the pod Emma Sexton. Emma is founder of MYWW, a remote-first creative agency, and that's with no office and an entirely flexible team. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that. Emma's also the founder of the Inside Out Awards, which celebrates in-house creative teams. And on top of that, amongst many other things, is also the co-host of the Badass Woman's Hour on Talk Radio. I should say the award-winning radio show. Welcome, Emma.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We've got so much to talk about, and I'm really keen to understand more about your agency model. But I wonder if you could, first of all, just give us a whistle-stop tour of your background and what led you to set up your agency.
Yeah, so my background, I'm a graphic designer by trade. I left school, didn't go to university because I could see that all the agencies in my local town were using the Apple Macs, yet the college that I wanted to go to had three Apple Macs in an entire building. So I was like, that's not going to be the way forward for me. So yeah, so very much just went up through the ranks as designer, creative director. I then did an MA in design management at LCC, and part of that was to really helped me kind of understand the business side of what I was doing. I think up until then, I was a designer kind of making things look pretty and, you know, would just be outraged if a client would criticize my work or want to add a load of information on it. I didn't get it. But then from doing that MA in design management, I then took a couple of roles in-house. The first one was turning an in-house team into a standalone design agency. And I think at the back of my mind, I'd always wanted to have my own agency. Yeah. I was just too scared. And I think in my early 20s, the barrier to setting up the business was quite big. You know, you did need office space. You really needed to invest in servers and computers. The software was so expensive. Yeah. So it felt like a huge, huge risk. And I think for me, I always felt like I just needed that extra experience at that extra level. Anyway, did a couple of these roles in-house, really enjoyed what I was doing. The setting up the sort of the internal agency was a real chance to play at running an agency, but with limited risk. Well, kind of no risk, really. And then I think I ran out of excuses and I was like, right, it's time to set up your own thing. You've always wanted to do that. But I felt like I didn't want to do just another design agency because I'd kind of done it. I felt like there were some really good ones out there. But what I felt was missing was this real understanding and real enablement of helping businesses to really understand how design could play a pivotal role in their business, which is what I had done when I was leading in-house teams. And so my original agency when I set up in 2013 was about enabling supporting businesses. So we did design delivery and then we did a consultancy to in-house teams. And that's also the year that I set up the in-house awards.
Great. And that's a really interesting starting point, actually, because, and it's something I haven't actually considered before, is agencies spend a lot of time trying to get to understand their clients, usually as a way to win more work or to win business initially, but it can be a bit of an inconvenience. But if your starting point is from having worked as part of an in-house team, setting up an in-house team, then your starting point is so close to the business's ambition and objectives. I can see how that's a really different take on an agency.
Definitely having that insider knowledge changed the way I created the agency, and it's also changed the way we deliver our creative work. So I kind of looked at what was going on in the industry, and I was looking at what these businesses that I had worked within actually needed. And I could see that, you know, there was a range of brilliant agencies out there and specialists, you know, they're specialists in their field, if it's advertising or branding. But actually a lot of companies had an awful lot of just day-to-day design work that they needed that you don't always have capacity with your in-house team. Maybe you've got a small in-house team. Maybe that team isn't working as effectively or as well as it could because the leadership is never strong enough within these companies. And then you go, well, it's okay because, you know, there's all this freelance talent that you can access. But really, there's a real art and mastering of briefing somebody properly, selecting the right talent, all of that. So our agency model is brought out of the best. We have three pillars to the business, and they're the three pillars that we think you need to deliver great creative work.
Okay.
So we have pillar one. Pillar one is like our strategic starting point. So that's my core team. Mm-hmm. So I have a 50-50 weighting on brilliant strategic creative direction mm-hmm. and brilliant strategic delivery. So from the get-go, we can get a project brief from our client and we can really make sure that one, we approach it in the right smart way mm-hmm. and two, we know how to get that project done. Secondly is our process. I'm a massive fan of process. Mm. Not process for process's sake, but process to make sure that we get the great creatives that we do. So we've created our own 4D model now for getting to the best creative, and it's collaborative, it's iterative, because we know that that first brief we get from the clients is not the brief.
Yeah.
So we never pitch for work because right. I'm not pitching based on that first brief because no. I know for a fact it's not the real thing. Mm. And I know that the client needs to see something before they can react or respond, or they'll tell us. It could be even something like, that project just looks too similar to something done by another team that yeah. they would never have put in the brief,
yeah.
but they needed to see something. So that way, we know that we can co-create with our clients, we can get to smarter creative, and then we have our network of talent. So I guess I kind of use the metaphor of us being like a creative orchestra. Every single one of our...
I love that.
Yeah, every single one of our creative talent are brilliant by themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a brilliant violinist and a brilliant drummer. But ultimately, for the projects that we do, and we're doing really big scale projects now, you need that conductor. And we, as an organisation, we are the conductor. We know what we're trying to get that team to deliver,
yeah.
and we know how to orchestrate that talent to make sure we've got the right people on the right things. And yeah, clients seem to really like it.
I'm interested how at the beginning, when you started going out, I mean, obviously you're not pitching, but when you started talking to prospects about this model, particularly the virtual aspect of the model, how that was received.
Yeah, it's interesting because my clients were as confident in it as I was. So in the first couple of years, when I'm like a scrappy startup, and you know, people are like, "Where are you based? Where are your office?" And I was very apologetic about, "Oh no, we don't have an office." Ha ha ha! Awkward. And yeah. You know, clearly they were like, "Well, okay, well, you know, that's fine. She's not delivering any major projects with us." And then I think after a while it became a conscious business decision.
Yeah.
And now I say it with 100% confidence,
yeah.
and therefore clients are 100% confident
yeah.
in it.
Yeah.
And ultimately it works. Don't get me wrong. I've had a lot of learnings along the way. You know, it is a different mindset when I've worked from the age of 18 to 37, so I was very conditioned to office life.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of things that I didn't realize that I've now learned, but I think as a team, as a way of working, it's a lot better. It's really powerful.
Fantastic. I mean, I wonder whether maybe, because as you say, at the beginning, the barriers to entry were really, really high. And the wonderful thing about technology is that it's removed so many of the barriers for all kinds of businesses to be able to start up from a kitchen table. Thank goodness. So there are so many positives. I'm wondering whether over time, in general, whether you see clients being more relaxed about the way that they work with partners and suppliers. And I ask that because I think I've noticed, having worked across the agency spectrum, that since the advent of lots of digital specialisms, clients have an understanding that they can buy very small, very specialist businesses that can deliver something very, very special and very bespoke. As well as the traditional kind of ad agency or media agency or branding agency model. And I'm wondering whether that has affected the thinking around what makes a good agency partner.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to like basic business fundamentals, right? And is it's chemistry? Do they like the way that you work? Are you delivering the work that you say you're going to do to the standard that you're going to do. And I think ultimately, whilst in the business, we operate very, very differently. You know, our business model and ways of working will be alien to a lot of people. But as far as our clients' experience, it's kind of irrelevant, you know, like, because they never come to our office. All they see is the work gets done. We're agile. We have the best people on the job for them. And, you know, we get to know their business inside out. So our, for our clients, I think it's kind of irrelevant. As long as we can be there at the meetings that they want to be. A lot of our clients want to do virtual calls now. It's very rare that we do lots. You know, we'll do some initial face-to-faces, but I'd say 90% of the meetings are end up being virtual as they are doing more flexible working. So I think as a business, my my team have a very different working life and working culture. But our clients, I think they don't really see any difference.
I remember seeing you speak back in the summer and talking about your kind of journey with the agency and some of your kind of working practices. And one of the things that really struck me was you were talking about how quickly you can get solutions for clients and how, because the motivation of your team, because they're working so flexibly, they just want to get things right first time because they want to get off and do something else.
Our productivity is next level because, you know, I half the time I don't know where my team are. They know that they have a job to do. They know that clients need to be happy, but they can then work the hours that they want to work. So there's a lot more motivation for them not to spend hours in meetings. I mean, when I was employed, you know, there's always the odd Monday where you're like, I'll sit and have a little gossip with my mate for half an hour. And, you know, I was time filling because I had to be in an office 9 till 6, Monday to Friday. Sometimes I was mega productive and mega busy, and sometimes I wasn't. And my team know that when they're not productive, you know, like, they can go and do something else. Or I don't know, maybe my like my creative director is really productive in the evenings, a bit like me. So morning, she's not really doing much. She's taking her son to school. She might have the odd call. But then she'll be online till midnight. But actually, she's more productive and her ideas are better.
I'm like that.
And also, exactly we don't waste time. We had a meeting the other day. It was like 8 minutes. Nailed it. It's like, let's just get this done. What needs to be done?
Fantastic. I'm wondering how that experience over the years of honing that and those methods of working and working with clients in this way, how that's informed your new business strategy.
I think, you know what, I feel like much as I've had the business almost 7 years, it'll be 7 years on the 1st of Jan, I think the business as it is now has only been like this for the past 18 months.
Okay.
Because I feel like the first few years of me starting up a business was me kind of playing around with entrepreneurship. I had an offer that I thought everybody needed, but people didn't know they needed it. So, yeah, I think it took a lot of kind of refining, actually. And I think I knew in my gut that there was a different way of working. But when you're a bit of a black sheep, you know, and you're in those early stages of setting up a business, it took me about 5 years to be really confident in the direction of the business. And since we have, I mean, we've doubled our growth this year and I'm going for double growth next year because I have clarity and I have the confidence and also I've got the right people now in the right places.
That's fantastic. And do you think that there are particular types of businesses that suit your particular model or attributes for certain types of clients that, that suit the way that you work?
I think we're definitely a B2B agency. I don't think that's down to the model. I think that's down to we kind of know where we're really, what we're really good at and where, you know, the most potential is for us as an agency. But I think that, especially for the creative industries, right, I think the challenge for me working in a team, leading teams were, and I certainly made some early hiring mistakes when I went to hire designers. And I think what I've learned now is, as far as skill sets go, there is such a diverse range of skill sets and experience you need from creatives. There's more and more creatives that are freelance now. So we can equally be working with the guy who's been working AKQA, could easily be working for us as he is for AKQA. So we can access, you know, the best talent. And I think whenever I've had designers in-house, you then get the creative brief, but you can't always deliver the best work because I've got to get my team to deliver that because we've got costs, and that's the most effective way of delivering that project. Yeah. Where with our model, we get to work with the best.
Yeah.
You know, my creative director is like, this is a total dream, because, but our model is not new, because our model is actually the film industry model, you know, where a film industry has their directors on their book, which is essentially my creative director.
Yeah.
And then a big production comes in and they pull in the best people for that production.
And it's exactly all handpicked for that.
It's all handpicked. And so that means that we make sure we get the right people at the right stages of the job. And there's an art to that.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're an experienced creative and you've delivered creative projects like my team have, then you just know. And then for us, it's just constantly seeking out that great talent.
And I guess probably I would imagine that as much of the challenge as well then becomes making sure that you are still attractive to that talent, and that the experience they have of working your way and working in this way is a fantastic experience, so they keep coming back for more.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing. You know, when you're working with freelancers, the mentality that the businesses that I used to work within had around freelancers is you get them in to do the crap work.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to any of the team functions. They're not really part of the team. They weren't really included at all. It was come in, do this crap work, and then leave. Where for me, these freelancers are a really important part of our community.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we treat them like that. But also, I like the mutual respect. You know, there is a level of respect that my team have for these creatives, because we want to continue working with them. And there's a level of respect that they have for my team, because they want to keep working for the great clients.
Yeah.
And I really like that tension. You know, either of us can walk away at any point. So there's a real motivation there, and a really nice collaborative mindset, which is like, you know, if we win more business and our clients happy, you can sit at home in your pajamas too and be fed loads of work. So there's you know, incentive on both sides. And, you know, we're doing lots around our community. You know, we had a sports day over the summer, and we'll have a Christmas party. So,
Lovely.
They're an important part of the team.
Lovely. I'm interested which book you would recommend to our listeners. Obviously, we give away a copy of your recommended read. So tell us what it's going to be.
I feel sorry for your listeners, because I'm well into like psychology and philosophy. So the book that I'm going to recommend is called The Courage to Be Disliked by Akira Kishima.
I love the sound of that.
Yeah.
I love the sound of that.
It's all about, so it's a dialogue between a philosopher and a student, and it is literally all about not caring what people think about you.
Perfect.
Which I think when you're doing new business,
you
have to really be resilient, right?
Yes.
So, it's a great book.
Fantastic. Well, our listeners will be delighted. You know what to do. Join in the conversation on Twitter at Gunpowder Tweets using the hashtag SmallSparkTheory, and we will pick a winner, and we will send you a copy of The Courage to Be Disliked. And please get in touch and let us know what you think of it. I would love to know what the best piece of advice that you've been given in your career would be.
So it's actually from my dad. And whilst it's probably been around Instagram a million times now, at the time, at the age of 27, it was a little bit of a light bulb moment for me. It was when I was studying my MA and I was freaking out about how much work there was. And I was like, Dad, I don't think I can do this MA. It's so much hard work. And, you know, I nearly broke myself writing this essay. And he's like, Emma, what you really need to do is work smarter, not harder. And I was like, oh, and actually, I know it sounds like such a simple thing, mm-hmm. but from that moment on, it totally changed my approach to everything I do. And even our model for getting to creative work is built out of working smarter, not harder.
Yeah.
Like
brilliant.
100%. I am the laziest person in the world.
I cannot believe that for a second, Emma. The lady who, I'm amazed that you actually managed to get here today, because I know you are involved in so many things and have a lot of strings to your bow. So I'm delighted that you're working smarter and not harder, and that you've managed to join us.
You always find time for the important things.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. And thanks so much for telling us your agency story. And best of luck with the year ahead
and
continued new business success.
Yeah, we'll give it a good go.
Thanks a lot. You have been listening to Small Spark Theory, brought to you by Gunpowder Consulting. Join in the conversation on Twitter at GunpowderTweets using the hashtag SmallSparkTheory. This podcast is created and hosted by me, Lucy Mann, and edited and produced by Isabel Jarvis. Music is provided by Duke Deck, available at dukedeck.com. If you'd like to find out more about our online mentored new business courses, visit smallsparktheory.com, or for information about our consulting, visit gunpowderconsulting.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, head to iTunes and leave us a star. This episode was recorded at The Pod at White City Place.